Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Taylor, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation. I was out of the 12th Hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is July the 26th, 2025. It is the third day of Abe 2029. Our service today is taken from one TG, Tommy Green, V.T. Holler, we're on number 6, and the title of our sermon is Zion and Her Daughters in the Last Day. So we're going to start with the prayer thought. V.T. Holler always used Ellen G. White's amount of blessings and Christ object lessons to read from, and so we're going to do the amount of blessings, page 154, Ellen G. White. I'll call it E.G. White, and it's entitled Yeshua. That's Yeshua's sacred name. We always use the sacred names here. Teaches us to call His Father our Father. He is not ashamed to call us brethren. So ready, so eager is the Savior's heart to welcome us as the members of the family of the Yahweh, that in the very first verse we are to use in the approaching of the Yahweh, His places, the assurance of our divine relationship, our Father. Here is the announcement of the wonderful truth, so full of encouragement and comfort, that the Yahweh loves us as He loves His Son. This is what the Yahshua said in His last prayer for His disciples. Thou hast loved them as Thou hast loved me. For the world that the Satan has claimed and has ruled over with a cruel tyranny, the Son of the Yahweh has, by the one vast achievement, encircled in His love and connected again with the throne of the Yeshua, cherubim and seraphim, and the unnumbered hosts of all the fallen worlds. Sang the anthems of praise unto the Yahweh, and the Lamb, when this triumph was assured. For they rejoiced that the way of the salvation had been opened unto the fallen race, and that the earth would be redeemed from the curse of sin. How much more should those rejoice who are the objects of such amazing love. To say our Father, not my Father, especially when praying in the public, helps us to realize that we are brothers. For the Yahweh loves us all as He loves the Yahshua and His Son, and He will not disappoint us if we pray and live as the Yahshua's prayers, as the Yahshua's prayer and example teach, for He cannot deny us the answer unto our prayers if we know what we are praying for. If we ask for the things we really need to have, the things He Himself is anxious that we have, before praying for anything, we must study it over first so that our prayers also may stand forever and ever. And then B.T. Holler goes on to say to his congregation, let us kneel and pray. So now I'm going to say to you out there, I'm going to put this on hold, and we're going to pray right here for a blessing upon Yahweh's people and this His Word and us. personally right here today. Okay, and prayer thought, and now it says, Zion and her daughters in the last days. Church of Address of Vichy Hall, September 14, 1946. For you remember that our last Sabbath study, we found that the prophecy of the third chapter of the Isaiah actually begins with the second chapter, continues on to the third, and ends with the fourth chapter. And you also recall that the concerns therein are for the spiritual house of Israel, the Seventh-day Adventist Church of today. And we can help with this article in 47, so you know where the Adventist Church was at in 47. They were in the 10th parabolic hour. In the 10th parabolic hour. And the 10th parabolic hour reached actually from 1844 to 1970. So Reggie Oliver was right in the heart of the 10th parabolic hour with the Adventist Church. He representing the inspiration for the Adventist Church, the new prophet. Sister Wright was already dead and gone. And so therefore he is a new voice of Yahweh, of inspiration to the house of Israel, the SGA. And he's the second prophet that was raised up to serve in a major position of the SGA. And I'll go ahead and continue reading. And you also recall that the concerns therein are for the church in the last days, in the latter part of the time of the end. In other words, you recollect that in these chapters, Yahweh is speaking directly unto his people who are living at this very time. Since the concerns of these chapters are addressed unto Judah, Jerusalem and Zion of the last days, and that's the time that we're in since 2002. We entered into the 12th parabolic hour of 2002 at the Passover at Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, and that was the beginning of the closing out of the judgment of the dead, of Brother Staunton closing out the Adventist Church's movement of the fourth. Matthew 20, verse 5, they were the called at the ninth parabolic hour, at the end of the ninth parabolic hour, 1844, and the Adventists labored in the 10th and the 11th parabolic hour. The 10th parabolic hour coming to an end in 1970, the 11th parabolic hour beginning in 1970 with Brother Johnson, and Gilead Center, the third feeding pastor for the Adventist movement of the fourth. And so as we go on and read now, it says, since the 11th parabolic hour ended in 2003, at the atonement of 2002, and officially at the second Passover of 2003, that's another story. Since the concerns of these chapters are addressed unto Judah, Jerusalem, and Zion of the last days, let us briefly transpose these titles into the language of today. They said, for the title Judah, Kingdom of Judah, takes in the nation as a whole, applying this title unto the church in our time, it means that the denomination as a whole, the people that are for the making up of the antithetical kingdom of the Judah, title Zion, the ancient palace ground, personified as in the chapter and away from the promised land means that the general conference of the Seventh-day Adventists, with the headquarters of the denomination for the Adventists, according unto the Nehemiah 11:1, the title Jerusalem anciently meant the city of the rulers of the nation. For the applying of this title unto our time and away from the fatherland, as inspiration does, means the under rulers of the general conference, to repeat, Judah takes in the laity, Jerusalem takes in the local and union, the conference, official Zion, for the Zion takes in the general conference of the officials. These are the only possible and logical applications that can be made of these titles. Knowing now that chapter 3 presents the Yahweh's concerns for us today, we shall begin our study with Isaiah 3:16. Moreover, the Yahweh said, because the daughters of Zion are hardy and walk with the stretched forth necks and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go and making a tinkling with their feet, besides the concern that we considered of the last week, Yahweh, is that the Yahweh has today this blessing for the daughters of Zion. So Zion today represents the Seventh-day Adventist Church in 1844 at the 10th hour. In 1970, it represented the Seventh-day Adventist Church at the 11th hour, Mount Zion, the 11th hour. And in 2003, it was called Mount Zion at the 12th hour. Elijah David was in charge of the Mount Zion at the 12th hour, 2003. Brother Johnson was in charge of Mount Zion at the 11th hour, 2011. Brother Johnson's in charge of Mount Zion at the 11th hour, 1970, Gilead Center, Kermit, Turkey. And L.G. White was in charge of Mount Zion at the 10th hour, and her co-laborers with her in the 10th hour was Vicki Hollis. No, she had many co-laborers in the 10th hour. L.G. White did. She had her husband, first, she was the first one. He married her in 1845 and gave her her name White, and he became a co-laborer with his wife in the 10th periodic hour, representing that bay team of horses that was hooked to the 4th church, Zechariah 6, the Adventist church. And then in 1888, Yahweh called Jones and Wagner to be co-laborers with Ellen G. White in the 10th hour. And then after 1890, when the General Conference took over the leadership of the Adventist Church, Yahweh raised up Taylor G. Branch, Seventh-day Adventist minister, that he wrote the book 40 Years in the Wilderness. And so he kept the Adventist Church on track in the 10th periodic hour, with inspiration, letting them know where they were in the stream of time from 1890 to 1930. And then Yahweh raised up Emmett Anderson at about 1928 to interpret Isaiah the Gospel Prophets, the last 13 chapters, from chapter 54 through 66. And so B.T. Oliver, and then Emmett Anderson wrote those little books Isaiah the gospel prophet, and he published them for the Seventh-day Adventists, and the Adventist Church accepted those Phillips books because they were written by one of their own ministers. But when V.P. Hardy was raised up as a Sabbath school teacher, and he was teaching from the Sabbath school quarterly, because the Adventist General Conference had authorized the publishing of Isaiah the Gospel Prophet by the Emmett Anderson, their minister, they authorized it to be published in the form of their Sabbath school lessons and their Sabbath school quarterly in 1929. And so V.T. Harlock being a Sabbath school teacher in the Adventist Church, as just the Seventh-day Adventist minister, he began to interpret from the Adventist those Sabbath school quarterlies about Isaiah the gospel prophet. Began to interpret it. And the Adventist ministers then lost his interpretation of how he was interpreting Isaiah the gospel prophet to his Sabbath school class. And so they come in and investigate him. They decided that he was teaching a false message, that he was interpreting that on his own, and they kicked him out of the church over it. And he took his Sabbath school class with him. Also, when they kicked him out too, because they stated V.T. Hardy. And that began the shepherd's rod, because V.T. Hardy, the second phase of the Adventist movement was the shepherd's rod. So V.T. Hardy, he had 25 years publishing as a rod for the Adventist and for the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist, his own people. And he died in 1955. Van Roden succeeded him in 1955. And Van Roden had a 15-year period to finish out the rod period that ended in 1970. And it also ended the 10th period by the tower with Van Roden. And then when Ben Roden ends the 10th prayer about his hour of 1970, gave way to Brother Johnson to succeed him and to open up the 11th prayer about his hour. And Brother Johnson rightfully called it Mount Zion at the 11th hour. And he named it right. And but he called the 11th prayer about his hour the last hour, but he made the same mistake that Ben Roden before him and V.T. Hardy before him made. V.T. Hardy said the 11th prayer about his hour started in 1930 with the shepherd's rod, but he was wrong. And he said the judgment of the living began in 1930. But no, he was wrong in all that. So it caused Ben Roden to be wrong. It caused Rodas to be wrong about this 11th prayer about his hour being the last hour of the time clock, on the parabolic time clock. So I come along and joined Brother Johnson in 1970 at the beginning of the 11th parabolic hour, and I served him for 33 and a half years. And so Yahweh gave me the keys of the kingdom, how to interpret the 12 parabolic hours in the day. John 11:9, Yahshua said to the disciples, are there not 12 hours in the day? Work while you have the light. And so the 12 apostles, they learned that day that there was 12 parabolic hours in a day and not just 11. The disciples thought there was only 11. But Yahshua had to use an example of something that he was going to do in the 12th hour to teach them that there are 12 hours instead of 11. I showed that to Royal Johnson many times over the years, and he refused to acknowledge that there was 12 hours in the parabolic day. So I knew then that Brother Johnson only had a certain time period to succeed in being the leader of Israel, and that one day he had his last day. And sure enough, that came in 2002, 2003. And I prophesied in 2002 that when he failed at the Passover, of 2002, I prophesied that he had 1 year to exist for Mount Zion at the 11th hour. I prophesied that. And sure enough, it came to pass, just like I prophesied. Okay, now as I continue to read, it said, in this particular verse, therefore, Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, is especially addressed to the daughters of the highest official and the Seventh-day Adventist denomination. And that's the general compositors of their Jesuit and first brothers that took over the Adventist Church in 1888 and 1890 at the Minneapolis Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist in that year of 1888. And it says, the ministry, those that are at the head of the work accordingly, so the General Council of Seventh-day Adventists took over the of the ministry at the head of the work of the, for the Adventists. And they retired Ellen G. White in 1890 by sending her away to Australia. And then they took over and they supervised Ellen G. White's work from 1890 to she died in 1915. So Ellen G. White's time was up then in 1890 as an official leader of the Adventist Church. And the General Conference took over. And then Vicki Hall took over from the General Conference in 1930 with the Shepherd Rod. Ben Roden succeeded Vicki Hall to finish out the last 15 years of the Shepherd Rod. Until 1970, and Brother Chauncey succeeded Ben Roden, and then I succeeded Brother Chauncey, 2003. Okay, so their pride is made manifest as the leadership of the General Conference of the Adventists, which are led by a bunch of Jesuit leaders. Their pride is made manifest in the fact that they walk with the stretched forth necks and wanton eyes, for they are unrestrained, licentious, vain. Then also, while walking, they mince and tinkle with their feet. They do not walk naturally. They perform, as it were, to attract public attention. As the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, sees them, they are on the streets and to get where they have started for, not for the getting of their work done, really, for they are there to be seen. This is the way that the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, sees the state of the affairs that exist among the daughters of Zion. Okay. For he sees them as ringleaders in the licentiousness and the congregation. So, with this explanation, we can conclude then that the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists represent nothing but a daughter of the real Zion, because Ellen G. White represented the real Zion, and the General Conference represents the daughter of the real Zion, and that was Mount Zion at the 10th hour. In 1888-1890, when the General Conference took over the Adventist Church. So they not only took over the Adventist Church, but they took over her name, and that was Mount Zion at the 10th hour. They also took over that as the daughter of Zion and not the mother of Zion. Ellen G. White's the mother of Zion. He sees them as ringleaders in the licentiousness and the congregation of the Seventh-day Adventists. And I'm going to read that again. He sees them as the ringleaders in the licentiousness in the Ellen G. White's Seventh-day Adventist congregation, not the General Conference Seventh-day Adventist congregation. Well, you remember in our previous studies that the Yahshua, son of Yahweh, has of what the Yahshua, Son of Yahweh, has against the ancients of his people, against the mighty man, the man of the war, the judge, the prophet, the prudent, the captain of the 50, the honorable, the counselor, the cunning officer, and the eloquent orator, Isaiah 3, 2, and 3. For they are the soothsayers, Yahshua declares, Isaiah declares in Isaiah 2:6, for they have eaten up the vineyard, and where does it say in Isaiah 5:7, for the vineyard of the Yahshua of the host is found in Israel. The Bible actually says the vineyard is Israel, but it's not. The vineyard is found in Israel. For the spoil of the poor is in their houses. Where do you find a vineyard when you go outside your door? You find it where you planted it. You planted it out on the ground in the world, but it don't take up the whole world. And it's not planted in the side of a building. It's planted out there on the ground. And so it would have to be a vineyard that is in the world, and that belongs to the house of Israel. The spoil of the poor is in their houses. In other words, the spoil of the poor, those general prophets have stolen the spoil of the 70 of Ellen G. White's advent. The general prophet took over, stole their identity, took over the leadership of the Adventists in 1888, 1890, and they instituted a false doctrine of the three in one person of the Godhead, the Trinity, false Catholic Trinity doctrine of the Seventh-day Adventists, and they started forcing down the Adventist throat to believe that in the face of the 2300-day prophecy of the cleansing of the sanctuary, Ellen G. White. Announced in 1844. Thus, inspiration points out that they are wickedly spending the spoil of the poor. Strong language indeed, but it is the Yahshua, Son of Yahweh, that says it. Isaiah 3:17. Therefore, the Yahshua, Son of Yahweh, will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion, and the Yahshua, Son of Yahweh, will discover their secret part. Because the daughters of Zion are on the one hand at the expense of the poor, making fools of themselves, and on the other hand, professing to represent heaven, and the Father Yahweh. For the Father Yahweh will smite with a shaft the crown of their heads. No, they are not getting away either with the spoil of the poor or with their own foolish, wicked, vain, fiddle battles. Okay. For the Yahweh will discover their secret parts if they do not now repent, for they are proudly misusing their heads and their necks, their wrists and their feet. They are proud to make a display of their wares. For this reason, Yahweh will put on display those parts which they do not wish to have exposed. He will make them naked. He will make a public example of them. Isaiah 2:18-23. In that day will the Yahweh that day the Yahweh will take away the bravery of the tinkling ornaments. About their feet and their calls and their round towers like the moon, the chains and the bracelets, and the mufflers, and the bonnets, and the ornaments of the legs, and the headband, and nose jewels, the changeable suits of the apparel, pins, the glasses, and the fine linen, and the hoods, and the veils. And that day, the day in which these conditions prevail among the Yahweh's professed people, he will take away their bravery, take away their boldness with which they make fools of themselves. He will remove the wicked ornaments of their feet, legs, and next, these daughters of Zion, right at the head of the work, are challenging the Yahweh and misleading his people at the expense of his truth, of his vineyard, and of the sweat of the poor. But now he will turn the tables. He will challenge them. What can round towers like the moon be? Well, they may be the high hills under their feet, the hills that make their necks long and their backs weak, but most likely the round towers like the moon may be the fancy thing which they put on their heads, and which they call hats, probably only because they are put where the hat ought to be. It's so extremely follow the fashion of the world is perfectly proper for the unbelievers, but it is certainly all wrong for those whose religion or whose religious professions condemn their practice. For the catalog of the ornaments takes in everything imaginable. Everything unless one may put on for this day. Why not now, brother, sister, remove from your bodies the vanities that degrade your professed reputation and that make the Yahweh's message of no effect? Why not now dress neat, clean, decent, modest, in harmony with your profession? Why wait until the Yahweh smites you with some curse from which you can never recover? Why not work out your welfare of life with the Yeshua, the Son of Yahweh, the one who is your only true friend here on the earth? Yahweh is our true friend in heaven, no doubt, the Father. So the Father, the Son, and all the angels are equally our friends in heaven. Deliver the only one who knows all your problems, the only one who can blot out your sin. Why not take the advice of the all-wise Yahweh? Why let hypocrisy bring you down to the level of the wicked, the indecent, and the disrespectful? Hypocrisy that leads down to the valley of the indecision. Okay. So, valley of the indecision. I wrote a song years ago when I was down in Kermit with the title Valley of Indecision. And I had never seen that in writing in my life. And it came to me one day, and I wrote it down on paper, and I wrote a song about it, and a good song. So, I'm reading here now, and Vicki Hall is writing, Valley of Indecision. Of the uncertainty of the calamity of the disgrace, why should you, in the name of the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, spin the devilish webs for the unwary feet to be entangled in? Why should you serve your enemy while professing to be the Yahshua, his son, the representative? Do you suppose that we can convert the heathen unto the Yahshua's high and exalted way of the living, when we dress no better than they, especially when they know that our dress is not in harmony with their own profession? So far, it looks as though the heathen are heathenizing the congregation rather than the church Christianizing them. Had the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, wanted you to be different from what you already are, he could have made you different. Or maybe talking about the Father here. Had Yahweh the Father wanted you to be different from what you already are, he could have made you different. Had he wanted you to be like a turkey bird, he would have as passively or as easily given you a nose, jewel, earring, and a brooch. Had he wanted you to look like a peacock, he would have given you a peacock tail and a peacock crown. Had he wanted you to have a stretched out neck, he would have given you a giraffe neck. Had he wanted you to tinkle as you go, he would have given you a rattler's tail. He could have made you any way he wanted to. But are you not glad that he has made you just what you are? Not many years ago, if one of the daughters of Zion should have appeared on the streets attired in the kind of dress they wear today, she would have been rushed into jail. But if one of them in a dress of that day should appear on the streets of today, no one would bother her. What does that mean to you? Does it not mean that the dress of today is indecent? And that the world's fashions are growing worse? Are you divinities also going to fall after the manner of the haughty daughters of Zion? Have you come into the world to gratify the eye? Of the street idlers? Or are you here to do the world good and to please the Yahweh? Which one if you brethren wants to have your wife or your daughter on exhibition to please the wanton eyes, then fill the streets. That fill the streets. Why is the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, to strip the daughters of Zion of their vanity? Let us hear him answer. Because the daughters of Zion are haughty, and walk with the stretched forth necks and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go, and making a tinkling with their feet. For the fashionable way of the dressing makes them haughty, proud, makes them stretch forth their necks, and makes them tinkle with their feet. Makes them do anything to attract attention. Yes, everything with which to make themselves appear indecent, hypocritical, and of the questionable character. Is it any wonder that there is so much wickedness in the congregation? One must, as it were, carry a gun to protect his wife on the street. How can it be otherwise when the women's way of dressing and itself invites trouble? Moreover, if you sisters do not dress in harmony with the Yahweh's will and harmony with his advanced truth, even the world, if it knows anything of your profession, will not think much of you, for they are looking for the hypocrites anyway. And if you are not faithful to your religion, you will in their eyes appear to be the best of the hypocrites. And it shall come to pass that instead of the sweet smell, there shall be stink, and instead of a girdle, a rent, and instead of a well set, a hair baldness, and instead of a stomacher, a girding of the sackcloth, and burning instead of the beauty. Dress properly, and you will find not only that the wicked men will not hang after you, but neither will the Yahweh's curses fall upon you. Isaiah 3:25. For thy men shall fall by the sword, and thy mighty in the war. If the daughters of Zion fail to reform, then their men shall fall by the sword. Do you want me to tell you why their men will fall by the sword? Because no sincere Christian boy in his right senses will ever as much as consider marrying a girl that dresses as a hypocrite. Or, I've had my words, or as a harlot. Dresses. And so if such a worldly-minded girl is ever to get married, what kind of man will she get? Not an informed Christian in the present truth, I am sure. She will get the kind of man that does not have the Yahweh's protection over him. The kind that is to fall in the war. The war that is fought while the Yahweh's people are being delivered. Reread track number 14. If you want to save your men, then quit fooling with the devil. Get to be the Yahweh's true representative. What would you think if the angels came down on the streets dressed like these daughters of Zion? Would you think they were angels Or would you think they were devils? Would you think that heaven is a good place to live in, honestly? Now, just what would you think? Would you give them the respect they deserve? No, I'm sure you would not. Then why not dress as would the angels dress? If they appear, they would not be ashamed to be seen, but many a woman would be ashamed to be seen by the angel. Truth is the truth, and the sense is a sense. Let us have them both. Isaiah 3:26. And her gates shall lament and mourn, and she being desolate shall sit upon the ground. For the very thing that sifts out the unconverted, because the standard of her profession is cast to the winds, her gates of the gathering places shall lament and mourn. This shall sit on the ground, not on a throne. Why suffer such a loss? Naturally, people will look at you, but they will not regard you as an evildoer or as a vain or a rude person. Or a lewd person, L-U-D-E, but rather as a respectable Christian. If they hate you, it will be because your behavior is making them ashamed. And moreover, how else will you win them to your religion, which they must have to be saved unless you rightly represent it? When I go out with my wife, people that have never seen me before, that have no idea who I may be, with, there's very little hesitancy to call me reverend, because they take her to be a preacher's wife. That shows what the people of the world think when they see properly well-dressed women. Better to have them think that you are a preacher's wife or daughter than to have them guessing what you could possibly be. Why not hate the Yahweh's rousing cry? Do not put off heeding this urgent call until tomorrow, brother, sister. For if you fail today, tomorrow will never come. This is your opportunity. As the aforementioned, as the Isaiah chapter 3 is a continuation of chapter 2, chapter 4 is a continuation of chapter 3. We shall therefore continue this study through chapter 4, Isaiah 4:1. And in that day, seven women shall take a hold of one man, saying, we will eat our own bread and wear our own apparel. Only let us recall by thy name to take away our reproach. That is, in the last days, the time that the daughters of Zion are hardy. Then seven women, all of the congregation of the Israel, the seven churches, which is of only the house of Israel, of that day shall in heart say unto the Yahshua, the one man, we shall eat our own bread, we shall wear our own clothes, we shall be entirely independent of thee. There is but one thing that we want from you, only let us be called by thy name, Christian, so as to take away our reproach. This is the way that Yahweh sees his church is saved by the world. Now, to this end, I want to read a poem to you, which perfectly tells how the fall has come about. The church walking with the world is the name of the poem. For the church and the world walk far apart on the changing shores of time. The world was singing a giddy song and the church a hymn sublime. come give me your hand, said the merry world, and walk with me this way. But the good church hid her snowy hand and solemnly answered, nay, I will not give you my hand at all, and I will not walk with you. Your way is the way that leads to death. Your words are all untrue. Nay, walk with me but a little space, said the world with a kindly air. The road I walk is a pleasant road, and the sun shines always there. Your path is thorny and rough and rude, but mine is broad and plain. My way is paved with the flowers and dews, and yours with the tears and pain. The sky to me is always blue, no want, no toil I know, for the sky above you is always dark. Your lot is a lot of woe. For there's room enough for you and me to travel side by side. Half shyly the church approached the world and gave him her hand of snow, and the old world rested and walked along, saying in accents slow, your dress is too simple to please my taste. I will give you pearls to wear, rich velvets and silks for your graceful form, and diamonds to deck your hair. For the church looked down at her plain white robes, and then at the dazzling world, and blushed as she saw his handsome lip with a small, contemptuous curl. I will change my dress for a costlier one, said the congregation with a smile of grace. Then her pure white garments drifted away, and the world gave way in their place. Beautiful satin and shining silk, roses and gems and costly pearls, while over her forehead her bright hair fell, crisp in a thousand curls. Your house is too plain, said the proud old world. I'll build you one like mine, with walls of marble and towers of gold and furniture ever so fine. So he built her a costly and beautiful house, most splendid it was to behold. Her sons and her beautiful daughters dwelt there, gleaming in the purple and gold. Rich fairs and shows in the halls were held, and the world and his children were there. Laughter and music and feasts were heard, and the place that was meant for prayer. There were cushioned seats for the rich and the gay, to sit in their pomp and pride, but the poor who were clad in the shabby array sat meekly down outside. You give too much to the poor, said the world, far more than you ought to do. If they are in need of shelter and food, why need it trouble you? Go take your money and buy rich robes, buy horses and carriages fine, buy pearls and jewels and dainty food, buy the rarest and costliest wine. My children, they dote on all of these things, and if you their love would win, you must do as they do and walk in the ways that they are walking in. So the poor returned from her door in scorn, and she heard not the orphan's cry, but she drew her beautiful robes aside as the widows went weeping by. Then the sons of the world and the sons of the congregation walk closely hand and heart, and only the master who knoweth all could tell the two apart. Then the church sat down at her ease and said, I become rich in my goods and increase. I have need of nothing or ought to do but to laugh and dance in peace. The sly world heard and he laughed in his sleep, and mockingly said aside, the church is fallen, the beautiful congregation, and her shame is her boast and her pride. The angel drew near to the mercy seat and whispered in sighs her name. Then the loud anthems of rapture were hushed, and heads were covered with shame, and a voice was heard at last by the congregation from him who sat on the throne. I know thy works and how thou hast said, I am rich and hast not known, that thou art naked and poor and blind and wretched before my face. Therefore from my presence cast I thee out and brought thy name to this place. Matilda C. Edwards wrote that poem. What a treasure. I do not know the author of this poem, but it seems it inspired what I have read to you for the Bible. For the poem tells the same story as the Bible does. Those who like to dress and look like the world do so only because their hand is, as it were, in the world's hand, and because the world refuses to walk with them unless they dress as the world dresses. Ironically, indeed, the world is true to its profession. But the daughters of Zion are not true to theirs. For the world kept on pleading the church, at first kept on backing out, but the world kept on pleading and pleading until it finally won. Those who give in by a fraction of an inch day by day are therefore the very ones who, by their influence, Satan is using to cause the church to fall. Awake, brother, awake, sister. Lest the devil make everlasting fools of us all. Yahweh is not asking us to put on anything that will roast our bodies, but he is asking us to put on something decent that will represent him and his message of the hour. Unless we do this, the world will not believe that he has sent us. And we ourselves will begin to doubt. Our manner of dress speaks louder than words. For the devil works both ways, for he himself cares not which, but he is careful to accommodate the sinner so as to win him unto his side. If one extreme will not do, the enemy lets him have the other. Anything to keep him from the middle of the road, anything to keep him from following the Yahweh. Isaiah 4:2. In that day shall the branch of the Yahweh be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth shall be excellent and comely for them that are escaped of Israel. In that day, in the day that the daughters of Zion become haughty, in the day that the seven women take hold of one man, at that time the branch of the Yeshua of the righteousness, Jeremiah 23:5, shall be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth excellent and comely for them that are the escaped of Israel. From what are his people to escape? Here is the answer. Isaiah 3:1-3. For behold, the Yeshua, the son of Yahweh, of the host, doth take away from the Jerusalem and from Judah the stay and the staff, the whole stay of the bread and the whole stay of the water, for the mighty man and the man of war, the judge and the prophet and the prudent and the ancient, the captain of the 50, and the honorable man, and the counselor, and the cunning artificer, and the eloquent orator, it is obvious that they escaped the destruction of these sinners and their congregation. Isaiah 4:3, and it shall come to pass that he that is left in Zion and he that remaineth in Jerusalem shall be called holy, even every one that is written among the living in Jerusalem. Only the holy ones, those whose names are left written in the book, escape the destruction that falls upon the wicked in the congregation. Only they constitute the remnant, the ones that are left. When is this to be? For the Yahweh himself has the answer. Isaiah 4:46. When the Yahshua shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion, and shall have purged the blood of the Jerusalem from the midst thereof by the spirit of judgment, and by the spirit of burning, and the Yahshua will feed upon every dwelling place of the Mount Zion, and upon her assemblies a cloud and a smoke by the day, and the shining of a flaming fire by the night, for upon all the glory shall be a defense. And there shall be a tabernacle for a shadow in the daytime from the heat, and for a place of the refuge, and for a covert from the storm, and from the rain. It is to be when the purification of the church takes place during the judgment of the living, and that we're that church, and we are in the judgment of the living here in the 12th Fair by the Tower since 2002, in the house of the Yahweh. 1 Peter 4:17, during the separation of the wheat from the tares, and that separation started at Gilead Synod Covenant, Texas, 2002, in the harvest time, in the time that the good fish are separated from among the bad, the ghosts, from among the sheep, Matthew 25:32. In this time of the trouble, when every element is at work for the bringing of the time of trouble such as never was, Daniel 12:1, Yahweh is to cleanse his church in order to protect his people from the trouble that she is headed for. The people that are left after the sinners are taken, the remnant shall have the perfect peace. For the Yahweh is now calling for men and women to proclaim liberty unto the captives, and the opening of the prison unto them that are bound, for the proclaiming of the acceptable year of the Yahweh, and the day of the vengeance of our Yahweh, to comfort all that mourn, to appoint unto them of that mourning Zion, to give unto them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, their garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness, that they might be called trees of the righteousness, the planting of the Yahweh, that might be glorified. And they shall build the old ways, they shall raise up the former desolation, and they shall repair the waste cities, the desolations of the many generations. And strangers shall stand and feed your flocks, and the sons of the alien shall be your plowmen and your vine dressers, but ye shall be named the priest of the Yahweh. Men shall call you the ministers of our Yahweh. Ye shall eat the riches of the Gentiles, and in their glory shall ye boast yourself. For your shame ye shall have double, and for the confusion they shall rejoice in their portion. Therefore in their land they shall possess the double. Everlasting joy shall be unto them, for I, the Yahweh, love judgment. I hate robbery for burnt offering, and I will direct their work in the truth, and I will make an everlasting covenant with them, and their seed shall be known among the Gentiles, and their offspring among the people. All that see them shall acknowledge them, that they are the seed which Yahweh has blessed. I will greatly rejoice in the Yahweh. My soul shall be joyful in my Yahweh. for he has clothed me with the garments of salvation. He has covered me with the robe of the righteousness, as a bridegroom decketh himself with the ornament, and as a bride adorneth herself with her jewels. For as the earth bringeth forth her bud, and as the garden causes the things that are sown in it to spring forth, so the Yahweh will cause righteousness and praise to spring forth before all the nations. For the Zion's sake will I not hold my peace, and for the Jerusalem's sake I will not rest, until the righteousness thereof go forth as the brightness, and the salvation thereof as a lamp that burneth. And the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness, and all kings thy glory, and thou shalt be called by a new name, which the mouth of the Yahweh shall name. Thou shalt also be a crown of the glory in the hand of the Yahweh, and a royal diadem in the hand of thy Yahweh. Thou shalt no more be termed forsaken, neither shalt thy land any more be termed desolate, but thou shalt be called Hephzibah, and thy land beauty. For the Yahweh delighteth in thee, and thy land shall be married. For as a young man marrieth a virgin, so shall thy sons marry thee. And as the bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so shall thy Yahweh rejoice over thee. I have set watchmen upon thy walls, O Jerusalem, which shall never hold their peace day nor night. Ye that make mention of the Yahweh, keep not silence, and give him no rest till he establish, until he make Jerusalem a praise in the earth. The Yahweh has sworn by his right hand and by the arm of his strength, surely I will no more give thy corn to be meat for thine enemies, and the sons of the strangers shall not drink thy wine. For the which thou hast labored, but they that have gathered it shall eat it and praise the Yahweh, and they that have brought it together shall drink it in the courts of my holiness. Go through the gates, prepare ye the way of the Yahweh, cast up the highway, gather out the stone, lift up a standard for the people. Behold, the Yahweh has proclaimed unto the end of the world. Say ye unto the daughter of Zion, behold, thy salvation cometh. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. And they shall call them the holy people, the redeemed of the Yahweh, and thou shalt be called sought out, a city not forsaken. Isaiah 61:1-11, Isaiah 62:1-12. Why not return unto Yahweh? No matter how bad a sinner you may be, he will gladly pardon you. Why not accept now his call? You cannot afford to lose out eternally. You certainly do not want to miss this future glory that is projected by the prophets and now freshly brought to light. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of the Yahweh abideth forever. 1 John 2:15-17. Wherefore, as the Holy Spirit said, today if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts, as in the provocation, in the day of the temptation, in the wilderness. Hebrews 3:7-8. This is your opportunity today to take, that today you may take it or you may pass it by, but tomorrow you will either leap for joy or gnash your teeth in the outer darkness. It now all depends on you. Surely you will not sell out so cheap as to forsake all this unsurpassing glory and Yahweh's heart-rending plea to drop the world and to return wholehearted unto him now at his final call. Can the world see Yahshua in you? Do we live so close to the master today, passing through and so on the life's busy way, that the world in us can a likeness see to the man of Calvary, who we love with love and his own akin. All his creatures lost in the mire of sin, will we reach a hand whatsoever it costs to reclaim a sinner lost? As an open book, they our lives will read through our words and acts given daily heed. Will they be attracted or turned away from the man of Calvary? Can the world see Yahshua in me? Can the world see Yahshua in you? Does your love to him ring true, and your life and service too? Can the world see Yahshua in you? Mrs. C. H. Moore. This brings the end of our study. This is our contact at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.